5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm John McGlash for the WDMA, and we're going to be talking about marketing today.
Dip and break fewer chips, which everyone will love. Well, almost everyone.
Forget about me.
Sorry, Frank. Made for dipping. Lay's Wavy.
From Tom Ewing, Editor-in-Chief, Sad Dogs, Happy Viewers. Who could object to more efficient chip dipping? Well, in this case, the humans have switched to the Wavy Lay's and the dogs are going without. So it's a smart ad because it takes an observation, and always start with observation, I say. That doesn't seem particularly valuable. Dogs like eating chips off the floor. But it indirectly proves that you get more dip with Lay's Wavy. Even though the focus is on the dogs, there's plenty of branding, as we saw through there. Clever, funny, heartwarming, an ad for everyone to enjoy, apart from those disappointed dogs. Okay, here's the ratings. Okay, star ratings is 4.6. The spike rating is 1.63, which is exceptional. Indicates short-term sales potential. Star rating predicts long-term market share growth. Fluency means that they've figured out what brand is involved. Here's the ad, and you can actually, if you go to the System One site, this is happiness and this is surprise. And so there's a little bit of surprise when you see the dog trying to get the, and then once you get the point, the surprise goes down. And here is the fluency. So right off the bat, right early in the commercial, we get a really good indication of what's going on. No mystery, not waiting till the very end, and it builds along the way. Okay, now I wanted to circle back to a survey I posted over the weekend, and I asked, is USPS obsolete and soon to vanish? Now, you know, you might not think much of this survey, but you're really, really limited on the number of characters you can put up on a survey. I don't know if you knew that. But you see how this ends, right? I don't know why they make it. It's like 30 characters. That's not enough to really get a good answer. But I got more votes on this than I've gotten in a long time from anything. And so this was really happy with this. I wasn't sure when I put the United States Postal Service. There's a little sign at the bottom that says you're not allowed to do political or controversial surveys or something like that. So I thought I might be breaking that rule. I did do something that said post office a couple of weeks ago, and that's how I got around it. But I just went ahead with USPS, and it seemed to work. The number one answer was, and I think this is really good. The number one answer was its importance is underestimated. That was really good. 51%. 6% said it would soon crush digital marketing. 22% said it will price itself out of business. And 21 got the right answer, more important than ever. I'm not sure that's true. You know, we do have alternatives. We do have alternatives if you want to get in touch with somebody. But I think it may be more important for the tactile aspect of it, and you can't push packages through the wires. So Daniel Dykstra said, the way it's currently operating is not sustainable, in my opinion. They must look at being more efficient. There's got to be some ways to improve mail delivery. Time will tell in 5 to 10 years. And I said, is it obsolete? He said, no, but the use has changed based on technology and customer needs. That was from Chris Hoffer. And then I asked if he could elaborate, and he said, John, go back to the pre-internet days. First class used to be bill, present, and payment. Email replaced the need in many people to send a personal letter to one another. Better targeting of direct mail evolved as the technology improved to find relevant targets. So as a result, volume has decreased. Yeah, we've sold people on the idea that, you know, just like digital, you can find just the relevant buyers. Only you can mail to just the people that are going to buy your product. So I guess that USPS isn't quite obsolete. We'll do some more surveys. They're fun. Okay, there's one true measure of marketing effectiveness. marketing T. And this is a variable that he's created, okay? He had a friend call him up, and he was invited to a baseball game, and Kyle Ripken was playing. And the stadium was 80% empty, but they watched Kyle get up and not have much impact, bat four times. But they had come to see Cal Ironman Ripken play ball, see one of his 2,632 consecutive games of baseball, that he played for 16 years without missing a game. Okay, and I was impressed with that until I looked up Brett Favre, Packer, Jet, and Viking. 18 years, 2 months, and 8 days. 321 football games, consecutive starts. It's the next closest is 70 fewer. 70. That's at 16 games a season, you know, plus maybe some playoff games. What's that? Like 4 or 5 more seasons than anybody else? We talk too much about moments in marketing and not enough about marketing tea. And that's, of course, why I'm so high on, for example, Land's End, who's still mailing the catalog. You know, I can tell you there were so many catalogers have cut the catalog circ. Land's End seems to be cutting pages. I'm concerned about that. L.L. Bean, another great example. Uline in Business to Business, great example. They keep mailing. And, you know, what happened, and I was I did a seminar with Travis Seaton, and he pointed out that in some of their clients, they'd switched from customer acquisition via mail to customer acquisition via digital. And they thought they were acquiring customers at like 1/4 the cost. What they didn't realize until about 2 years later is that these customers they were acquiring at bargain basement rates had no staying power and no lifetime value. So all of a sudden they decide after the first 6 months to cancel the catalog because digital is everything, as we all know. And they fire the creative team, they, you know, get rid of their printer, they pull the plug, everybody's gone, the whole department. You know, Sears canceled their catalog, and 800 people lost their jobs. And then they outsourced the catalogs, but it was never the same. That was the beginning of the end for Sears. And what the accounting department, who advocated for canceling the catalog, didn't realize was that 10% of the gross revenue of the catalog came back to the stores. It was the single most profitable thing the stores had going for them. And so the stores were always saying, mail more, mail more. And some accountants came in and they said, you know, this catalog isn't making money. It's losing money. Well, it was a $5 billion business. You know, you think they could have just scaled it back a little to $4 billion and made money? Probably. Or cut that commission to the, you know, if they would have looked at it right, they probably would have been profitable at $5 billion, right? Cut back the stores, but whatever, accounting. I got that from somebody who lost their job, the 800, and knew what was going on. So anyway, marketing is all about the instant and the moment, right? It wasn't Cal Ripken that got us to the game all those years ago. I mean, it wasn't Cal Ripken that got us to the game. It was Cal Ripken T. It was the longevity of Cal Ripken. I actually ran into him in a Denny's. I said hello in Seattle one time. He said he was out there, you know, talking to investors about something. Pretty funny. Pretty gray hair. A lot of gray hair. I mean, I don't mean pretty, but he was very gray. More gray than me or more hair than me. Okay, we talk too much about moments in marketing. 2 years ago, everybody was hyping Prime Energy Drink. There were lines out the door. People were paying up to 10 times its retail price. Kids were photographed waiting patiently in line for a single bottle. The product became overstocked, and then all of a sudden, it all disappeared. Overstocks, they probably made their money, but they could have had a sustainable and more profitable approach. This happened with Pringles, by the way. They did test markets and everybody, and they just plastered the test cities with billboards and TV commercials and anything they could. And everybody wanted to try them, so they just flew off the shelves. You couldn't keep them on the shelves. Thought they had a huge hit. But the truth was, the novelty and the crowd, you know, everybody wanted to go with the crowd and find out what this craze was about. And it wasn't that anybody liked Pringles. It was that they were just the thing at the moment. If they would have had a slow, and so then they built like two more factories and they were ready to pump them out to the whole country. And then the same thing happened. Not because their marketing was bad or their product was particularly bad, but it certainly isn't Lay's Wavies. That's no good. Not anything close. Okay. So more sustainable, ultimately more profitable approach. And there's a company that puts together the league table of global brands. They look at financial analysis. Are they profitable? Are they growing? Then they do an adjustment or an assessment of how much that financial sum is driven by the brand as opposed to other factors like price or availability or, you know, like in COVID, all of a sudden the health products, the hygiene products went off the shelf. And finally, they take that revised amount and assess it against the time. Okay, the whole thing is essentially a net present value. And without the final crucial multiplier of time, any estimate of brand value is meaningless. Bernard Arnault, chairman and CEO of LVMH, who has brands like Louis Vuitton, was asked what he thought about Apple being the most highly valued company in the world. He said he was sure that his clients in the far distant future would be drinking Dom Perignon and traveling with Louis Vuitton luggage, but he was less certain that that would be the case for the iPhone. Well put. Not necessarily that they won't, but it's a little different. Apple, for all its glory, was less attractive if you looked at Apple with the T variable. Apple times T. So every year for the last 20 years, Bernard's brand has grown, and every year any subsequent growth gets harder, and every year Louis Vuitton grows again. Adding the T variable adds not just data points, but variable perspective, which is sorely missed as it is incredibly important. And that's what the marketing awards should focus on. And he makes other points about other brands. There's a ridiculous lack of people aged 40 plus, but you can find them around. They're around. They're still around. And some of them are live streaming. They're right up on the latest technology. But let's go on. Keep time in mind and look at the people that have stood the test of time. Look at Hamaker Schlemmer, 150-year-old catalog company, longer than that. Look at, we tend to work with those long, long time brands. They've got staying power, and yet they still want to be up on the technology. So last, I want to get back to Jerry Dakin. I'm going to go down into this a little. This is exactly the same as Ritson's talking about. Okay, but sometimes the C-suite suddenly asks questions. They hear about Procter & Gamble. Absolutely everything we did needed to focus on data acquisition, targeting, and personalization. And of course, it made sense for Pampers to scope out the entire lifespan of your child. But Tide, you know, get the laundry clean. I wished I had more confidence to speak out. Well, you can join me every day. That's all I've got. But in the end of 2023, a programmatic supply chain on transparency done by the ANA, Association of National Advertisers, Lisa Smith. No, she didn't do the study, but she's my friend there, said one-third of the money advertisers spend on programmatic media makes it to the final consumer and publisher. Okay? Fraudulent, we talked about that yesterday. Fraudulent, there are fraudulent sites, and a third of the money goes to low-quality clickbait sites. The final third goes to ad tech, which means two-thirds of the money goes not to the publisher, but to the middlemen and the crooks. And the crooks make as much as the middlemen. And maybe they're related. Maybe the middlemen have an incentive in clicks to get more money from you. So maybe they're in cahoots. Google seems to have an incentive. 61% of their Google shop is fraud, according to yesterday's article. Happy to go get it on WDMA.com. Anyway, nobody seems to pay any attention to this. It must be worth it because everyone's using it. But if you took two-thirds of your media budget that would otherwise be used up in the system and give that directly to a media owner, they will love you. They will love you. They will give you extra perks. They might even give you the mailing list so that you could mail them. Also, we all want to get as much first-party data as possible. Now, I've spent almost 30 years working with first-party data in machine learning. We pioneered and we tested favorably against basically everybody. Okay, give us the same data and we'll beat whatever you're doing. Okay, and it's not because we have the best algorithm. The algorithms are all from the 50s. But the more data you put in, now that you've got your ad persona, your customer persona, and you try to buy that in media, it won't work. See my Windham Hill case study in my book. We never ask questions about how accurate the data is in the first place. Not much. Mostly based on census data. Okay? It would have been cheaper to reach, if you take all these costs, it would have been cheaper to reach your hyper-targeted audience simply by carrying out a broader media buy that happened to include them as well as countless others as a bonus. And that's how you grow a brand. You don't grow a brand by finding the six people that for sure will buy it. Okay? And that's the fallacy of it. That's the fallacy of the entire, we will put the ad right before your buyer, before they know they need it. Doesn't work. You want to be there before they go on Google and say pizza near me, okay? Okay? It's hugely tempting to reach exactly the right consumer at the right time with the right message. But it's fraud. It's just as much fraud as the fake clickbait websites. It might make more sense to reach roughly the right consumers at almost the right time. Yeah, absolutely. With a message they haven't heard, maybe that would help. And maybe if you did it with mail, you would break through the clutter. You would get the brand attention. Tomorrow I'm going to try to track down more info from David Foley. He wrote me today and said that Absolute mailed 70,000 postcards in Canada to launch a premium Absolute brand to professionals, just general mailing. And sales went up something like 70%. Not well targeted, but impactful, breaks through the clutter, gets to people with money. That's most of it. That's most of what targeting should be. I mean, granted, you don't want to mail everybody, but you want to mail as many people as you can. You don't want to try and spend a lot of money on tech, whittling it down to nothing. I'm telling you, that just doesn't work, and I've been part of it for years. There's little evidence to suggest it's actually a hugely effective marketing tactic to have individualized communications, even though that's what everybody's done. And it's often done badly, and it's a disservice to the power of big unifying creative ideas, and also that markets are bigger than what you've already serviced. Okay? There's got to be a middle ground here somewhere, but I really appreciate what Jerry has to say. It may be a little old school or old fashioned to question how much data and targeting you truly need. Happy to advise you. I've told a lot of people marketing or targeting isn't right for you. There's other alternatives. Or you can do targeting and testing and machine learning as a laboratory, like the LoveSack case study, and then roll it out to your media in a big idea. Okay? Data and targeting might be relevant for a highly niche product, for instance, very premium whiskey, than it is for something more like mainstream bourbon. But it might not be, because some of those mainstream bourbon drinkers have an aspirational interest in whiskey. You'll hardly notice the death of the cookie if you're relying more on broader audiences or native partner targeting. This article is so rich with good ideas. Okay, just wonderful. Jerry, thank you for that. Have a great day. Sorry I went a little long. We'll edit it down for the podcast. Get over to WDMA.org to find out the links and have a great day.